Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. I am Eleanor Mermelstein. I'm here with my partner, Sylvia Busis. We are interviewing Saul Weisberg on May 31, 1985, in an office at the United Jewish Federation Building. Saul, what is your home address?
700 Glen Manor Road.
Thank you.
Alabama, Kansas.
Thank you. Saul, I'm going to start our interview by asking you about your family background. Let us begin with your mother and father, their names, and when and where were they born?
Their names were Jacob Weisberg, who was born in Sokobola, near Bialystok, in Russia. And my mother, whose native town I really don't know, but who came to this country when she was very, very small.
What year were they born in? I should say years.
What years were they born in? Let's see. I really don't know the precise dates without doing some calculation. Why don't we say that my father came to this country in about 1894, and he was at that time at the age of either 18 or 19. So he was born in approximately 1874. My mother died in 1944, and so she would have been born in about 1880.
Can you tell us something about your childhood? Where did you live?
I lived in East Liberty, not far from the home of the Busis. And actually, I lived on a street called Black Street, which my wife, Tibby, came to believe was the longest street in at least Pennsylvania, because we kept having contact with people who indicated that somewhere along the line they had also lived on Black Street. Eventually, I took Tibby to Black Street to show her this long and extraordinary thoroughfare, and it turned out to be a rather long hill and one additional block. And Tibby never quite understood how this extraordinary number of people somewhere along the line had managed to live on Black Street. Are you familiar with Black Street, either of you? Sylvia should be.
Yes, I
know the name. sisters and brothers, what about them? Did you have sisters, brothers?
I have four. Only one is alive. Two sisters, two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
One boy, one brother is alive in California.
I see. What does he do?
Well, he was a lawyer once upon a time. Now he and his wife is a gifted artist, by the way, and he and his wife still make wall plaques and so forth, but he's only semi-active.
Mm-hmm.
He's older than I am.
Uh-huh. And what about the other members of your family that are deceased? Were they older, younger than you?
They were all older.
You're the baby of the family.
I was the baby of the family.
Mm-hmm. What about your home life when you were
a twin?
A twin, really?
My wife is a twin.
Oh.
My wife's twin is living. My twin died. My wife, twin sister died when she was about six.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a religious atmosphere when you were a child?
Yes and no. My father was a relatively active member of the B'nai Israel synagogue, but it was not a religious atmosphere that enveloped us, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean. Do you
yes.
know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Were you bar mitzvah?
Yes. I was bar mitzvah at B'nai Israel with my old friend Benny Lichter, who used to have occasional conversations with me about marriage. He never got married.
Mm-hmm. What about confirmation? Did B'nai Israel have confirmation?
No.
I guess the synagogues
did.
If it
did, I certainly escaped it.
Your brothers, were they bar mitzvah also? I'm sure they were. What about cultural activities at home? Were there any particular things, musically inclined?
Yeah.
Writing?
I had some of that, although one of the very interesting things, and I don't know how open people are about this, but one of the very interesting things about many of the children in my generation was the relative remoteness in some ways from the family. I spent a great deal of my early childhood out of the family, not in it, because I think this is very typical of a certain element. My father was an immigrant. My mother spoke, was not really an immigrant in the sense that she spoke good English and so forth. But my cup of tea, so to speak, as a child was to escape the family and to be on the streets. Not in the sense of, as today you read about, in the sense of participating in a drug culture or crime or anything like that, but to be with friends and so forth, not to be with my parents or my family and so forth. And my parents accepted that. I don't know that they had much choice.
Well, maybe they were too busy with their business.
Yes, I'm not being in any sense critical. Mm-hmm. But as I say, I've often thought that I shouldn't say it's not been stressed. Certainly a good deal of so-called Jewish literature deals with the whole question of the separation or indeed the hostility between the immigrant generation and their children. And I was, after all, the child of an immigrant, and I think the cultural separation and so forth was very distinct.
Mm-hmm. What about discipline at home?
I don't remember that as being a significant problem one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your early school life. Where did you go to grade school?
I went to the Rogers School, which I think is still standing, but whether it's in operation, and if so, exactly what form it took, I don't know. It was an interesting school in the sense that where I lived, I said before that there was a long hill. That was one block of Black Street, although Black Street extended beyond that, and then there was this level street that ran into Negley Avenue. And on the hill particularly, there was quite a mixture of other ethnic and racial backgrounds. There was a significant number of Italians. At the top of the hill, there was a significant number of blacks, and there was a fair amount of difficulties. Not exactly stemming from bigotry, but rather stemming from the foreign elements and the natural instincts, if I may put it that way, of the young and so forth. So that it was a mixed place.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting.
Where did you attend high school?
Peabody.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming these schools were both close to Black Street?
Well, the Rogers is on Black Street. Peabody, I don't know, a quarter of a mile, half a mile.
Mm-hmm. What about college?
I went to Pitt.
And what was your major at Pitt?
Rather oddly enough, political science.
Did you have any main interests in school?
No. I don't know that. I was politically oriented, I suppose, as you think back over it. I might as well put this on the record. I wasn't a very good student. I was very bright. Sylvia will probably find no objection in my saying that.
I've already told Eleanor that you are.
And the only reason I say that, it wasn't, I shouldn't use the word bright. I was very quick. I absorbed very quick. In fact, I'll go so far being more open than I expected to be. I was one of those who could read a page, you know, at a glance, and then remember the whole page and all that stuff.
In other words, a photographic
mind.
Yeah,
pretty much. I was pretty quick. Mm-hmm. College was not a place that exactly challenged me and so forth, so I sort of floated through.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize today, as I look back over it, that I've always told everybody that I know who's 16 or 17 that remember the first thing you want to do in college is enjoy yourself. I always tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
Always in, well, not always in the presence of their parents.
Well, after college, did you go on to?
I went to law school.
Oh, you did? And did you practice law at any time?
Not much. Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Mm-hmm. When you were a teenager, what activities did you like and participate in?
Well, sports. I played, matter of fact, baseball. Not so much football. I was light. We had our own pickup team. Matter of fact, we used to go to Morningside and play officially, in a sense. And I was a reader. I was a very quick reader. Not a very fast. The great classics, all that stuff, I read very rapidly and absorbed a fair amount of it. Some of it I still remember.
When you said you really weren't a student, but you picked everything up quickly, what prompted you to want to go to law school?
Actually, because I wandered around for a while and finally it became a compromise in a sense. I considered other things on leaving Pittsburgh and so forth, but for various reasons which I won't go into, which will come up later, which I won't go into, I finally wound up in law school.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about first meeting your wife. Was that during college or after college?
No. I met Tibby on the job here.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very interesting story.
Well,
I don't know how much of it I should put on the record.
Oh, tell us about your courtship.
Anything that won't embarrass Tibby.
Well, she's told some of the stories so many times, I don't know whether it'll embarrass her or not if we put it in writing. I don't mind telling it, but I don't want it in writing. Anyway, now what happened was this, and it really goes back to the whole business of my getting the job and so forth, which I'll put on the record now, if you don't mind. Get that out of the way. I was in the Army for several years, and was discharged in California in late 45 or early 46. I remained in California. That's when my brother came out. But I was restless there, and eventually, this will probably interest Sylvia, because I'm sure she doesn't know this, very few people do. Eventually, I was offered through some long-distance correspondence an opportunity to get a job with the JDC, American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee, overseas, which I really did want badly. And I came east to go to New York to do some training and so forth. And on my way east, I stopped off in Pittsburgh where my family was still there. My mother had died. My father was still living, and sisters and this and that. Turned out that there were family problems, and I had not been involved in having been in the Army. I finally decided that I should not go to Europe, so I remained here. And this was in the spring of 1947. And I was very close friends even then with Saul and Frieda Shapiro, who I've been lifelong friends, very, very close. And they lived on, I guess it was Birchfield, Sylvia. And their either upstairs or downstairs tenant was a fellow named Harry Rosen. I don't know if that name means anything.
I've met him in Israel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Harry Rosen at that time was the campaign director, and number two, if you want to call it that, for what was then the United Jewish Fund. There were two organizations at that time, United Jewish Fund and the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies. This was in 47, and for Sylvia, denied a Jewish fund that suddenly exploded both locally and nationally in response to the establishment of the State of Israel and the return of refugees to Israel out of the concentration camps, and the first really large fundraising campaigns were just underway, 1946, but especially 1947. And the United Jewish Fund locally, which was then in an office downtown in what was then the Keystone Hotel, I guess, was overwhelmed. And Harry Rosen mentioned to Saul Shapira and to Freedom that they really desperately needed somebody who maybe could come in and do a special job for them, having to do with a major event that was taking place then. Extraordinary event in which they were bringing Milton Berle and the Moshe Shertok, and they were going to use on the same night both the Syria Mosque and the old Duquesne Gardens. This was in 47. And Saul said, gee, I think Saul Weisberg is sort of at loose ends. I've been in Pittsburgh maybe a month then. I decided to remain. Maybe he would be willing to do it, and he probably could do what you want. So I was asked to come down and see Dr. Taylor. I don't know if that name means anything to you or not.
I've heard the name.
He was then the director. Harry Rosen, as I said before, was the campaign director. And I came down and I talked to Taylor. The other way around, actually, it turned out that Dr. Taylor was short and but interesting. Anyway, it turned out that he orated to me rather than the other way around. But we got along, and he asked me if I would do this particular business of handling this, not the total affair, but the arrangements for it and so forth. And I said, yes, I would. Turned out I worked two full shifts for about, I don't know, 6 weeks or 2 months. And then they asked if I would stay on, sort of run, I guess, the whole office for a while. And even though this was different from my background, I had done other things in the past, like National Labor Relations Board, I had been in planning, city planning and things like that. And I had not been intended this, but anyway.
Well, when you say two full shifts, what do you mean by that?
Two full time shifts.
In other words, you were working day and night.
Yeah, well, just for a short time. It wasn't hard. Matter of fact, I took time off, if I remember, from each shift to go to a movie. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's a nice thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how. In the meantime, on June 1st, and I know that because tomorrow is Tibby's anniversary, on June 1st, 1947, Harry Rosen employed Tibby, my future wife, who was not equipped to do anything much either, just as I hadn't. That's true, Sylvia. Tibby will tell you that. She didn't know how, I think, at that time to run a mimeograph or anything. Somehow or other, I already recognized, though, that there was a calendar. Tibby had been a cartographer. She had drawn a map. She was about four, I think, at the time. But she had drawn a map for the United States Army in the war. Did you know that, Sylvia?
No.
Yeah, she had a job for a while during the war, or after the war, drawing maps. So that's how I began a supervisor. I supervised her to the extent that eventually, took a long time, as Tibby will, probably even in Sylvia's hearing is mentioned, took a long time, but we finally got married.
When you say a long time, what do you mean, like a month?
I was really established as a non-marrying person, but she changed her mind. Anyway, we got married in 1955.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a family?
No.
Mm-hmm. And you, Tibby has been with the United Jewish Federation through the years?
Ever since.
Saul, would you like to contrast the way you were raised with
the
way...
She talks more openly than I do, by the way. So you ought to interview her next.
Would you like to contrast the way families are being raised today with the way you were raised as a child, or have you not observed, since you don't have children in your own family?
I've observed all right. I'm not so sure that I am prepared to generalize, although it's obvious that there are certain differences that are built into family life. First of all, my mother had at least seven children. I don't know how many miscarriages, but she had seven children, two of whom she lost after they had passed childhood. Well, one at the age of six, and the other one, I think, at the age of maybe three or four, maybe later. And my mother suffered physically and emotionally a great deal during her her life. Tibby's mother, for instance, had at least nine children. And so you right off the bat, the role of the mother and the role of the children, et cetera, is altogether different from the role of the middle class families that I at least am accustomed to observing. What happens in the poorer families today, where you still have large numbers of children and parents who are struggling desperately and so forth, I don't know. It's altogether different in a way, because the temptation, well, it's not the temptation so much, the allure that television and so forth, the movies presents, is of course missing, etc. My family was not a Levinson family, in my opinion, if you know what I mean by that.
No, I don't.
Okay. I mean by that, it was not a Sam Levinson family. You ever read Sam Levinson?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you read Sam Levinson, you'll know that, you know, even though it was a large family and there was discipline and this and that and so forth, he characterizes it as having, I think he means to project a lot of closeness and so forth. I wouldn't say that my family was characterized by the kind of closeness, although I was the youngest, and it's really very hard to know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
When you married Tibby, where did you establish housekeeping?
I suffered a great deal. Is that all we got? 5 minutes?
Just on this side.
Oh,
no problem.
Right,
no problem.
I'm in a rush. I'll probably learn to enjoy this. I don't do it very often. We lived for about 15 months or whatever it was in a big little apartment. I was determined to move out into the country, so to speak. In fact, if it had been up to me, we'd have probably been about an hour and a half away. I'm a nature person. And finally, we did find a place out in McCandless Township. Sylvia's been there, and it's attractive, I think. And that's where we've lived since 1956.
Mm-hmm. Well, that really sounds like country. That's through the North Hills, I believe?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's the North Hills.
What about the neighborhood? How would you contrast the neighborhood in which you live today versus the neighborhood that you grew up in as a child?
Well, in a way, it doesn't make too much difference, because we're not really part of the neighborhood in terms of involvement, in terms of relationship with people and so forth. But in terms of physical aspects, it's quite a contrast. Ingomar, where I live, precise spot where I live, doesn't happen to be particularly, I don't want to use the word pretentious, that's too strong a word, doesn't happen to be too affluent looking and so forth. But Ingomar generally has a nice rural, or not rural, it's a nice suburban look. Doesn't have a metropolitan or a city flavor to it at all. It's quite different from where I grew up. Remember, where I grew up, was a string of houses, an alley where I and other youngsters congregated to play all sorts of that's when I was quite small, to play all sorts of games. Then there was another set of houses running another street, and then on the other side of the street, and then an alley, and so forth. And a particular alley in which, right around our house, did happen to be a center of a lot of action with children and so forth. None of that in Ingomar. I don't know if there are any of that anywhere except places maybe like the Hill District and so forth. I don't know what happens in Point Breeze, for example, whether kids go out in the alley and play what's called cat and dog or things like that or not. I sort of doubt it.
There are no more alleys. They have to go down the street.
What?
There are no more alleys.
Right.
That's
a big difference. As a matter of fact, an alley was a very important element in growing up. It was a, now that I think about it, one could have a lot of fun exploring the sociological consequences of alleys and so forth. I better not pursue that. But I think it would be lots of fun to do so.
I assume since you like rural living, you're probably interested in gardening.
Yeah, we're heavy gardening.
Your wife also?
Sure.
Had she been a Pittsburgher all her life?
Yes. Forget. As a matter of fact, I don't think she'll really take a fit if I say she never was out of Oakland before she was 18. That isn't true.
I'm sure she went downtown to do some shopping. What woman doesn't?
Oh, before she, when she got to become an adult, yeah. But I think until she was she got out of high school, she did too much of that. Interestingly enough, by the way, her closest friends were Irish when she grew up. The Coins, who were a well-known family in Pittsburgh, she still maintains contact with them. They were very, very close.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was probably the neighborhood in which she lived.
Yeah, well, it was Oakland, but there were a lot of the... Matter of fact, this building in which you're interviewing me was once the site of the residence of Senator James Coin, who was the top Republican politician, at least in this area, and to some extent in Pennsylvania, the top Republican politician for many, many years.
I didn't know that.
We seem to have a little more time on the tape. I thought it was pretty close to the end. A few more. You can ask one more question.
I'm sure that you have belonged to many organizations through the years, Saul.
No.
No? Not organization-minded?
Not at all.
Not a member of B'nai B'rith?
No. I made it a policy. I would have been a member, probably. Although I'm not so sure I've been an active participant. But I would have been a member, but I, as a person of the Federation, on the whole, I decided really a long time ago not to be get involved because I would become a member of everything, and I really get it. Mm-hmm. There's some exceptions, but not too much.
Have you had any political involvement through the years, either before or after your connection with UJF?
A little. Oh, no, not after my... Once I became part of the UJF, I, on the whole, became non-political. Before that, I had some involvement. I wasn't just politics, but between my graduation at Pitt, through law school, until I went into the Army, I was involved in governmental activities. I worked for the National Labor Relations Board. I worked for... Pittsburgh Regional Planning Association. I was really quite close to the person who many people consider to be the outstanding city planner in Pittsburgh's history, Wallace Richards.
Name may
or may not mean anything to you. As a matter of fact, after I came back to Pittsburgh, to the Federation, in 1948, I guess it would be, and so forth, he wanted me to leave the Federation. I've thought about that many times.
Well, I think we're probably about at the end of this tape.
I don't think it's moving.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it certainly is.
Can you tell us a little bit more about labor relations involvement? It sounds very interesting.
Sure, it wasn't very substantial. But there were a couple of them. The Housing Authority. National Labor Relations was a relatively new organization, government organization.
Was this before the war?
This was in the 30s.
I see.
Housing Authority, for example, was completely new. I was one of the very early employees. Saul Shapiro, by the way, was, I don't know, among the first three or four employees. National Labor Relations Board, I never had a permanent job with them, but I did some things like supervise elections that took place. But I'm trying to remember, this probably being, I think I was already in law school when I did that. Maybe not. The Housing Authority, I had a permanent job, and as a matter of fact, when I went to the Army, I left a job at Housing. I was tenant selection supervisor. I was selecting tenants for the various developments that were already in operation. At that time, the Housing Authority was...